Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We are ready for our final speakers, who I'm very excited to hear from about Tradition One, Unity, and Welfare, Common Welfare. I hope you've enjoyed the celebration thus far, and we will continue. So, Ken and Mary, please share with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I am Mary, and I'm a grateful recovering codependent.
And I'm Ken. I'm grateful to be recovering from codependence, and also grateful that we are both recovering from respiratory crud. So if we sound a little hoarse and kind of whatever, please just disregard that, but we feel a lot better than we sound, so.
Thank you. So we want to, first, we just wanted to thank everyone, the committee, this, you know, the whole, all the workshops that have been done today. They've just been, what a remarkable thing for CODA to experience. And thank you so much to everybody who participated and everybody who helped put this on. We definitely appreciate it.
We love the work of the International CODA Royale. Sort of reminds me of a James Bond movie. Probably is for half of us.
All right, so Ken's going to begin.
I am. We're going to focus on the Tradition One. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on CODA unity. And to that end, we're going to focus first on just the first half of that. Our common welfare should come first. And so I'm going to read a little and then share a little bit of my experience with that. If we are looking at ourselves individually, each of our definitions of what our common welfare is may be different. We may have different boundaries, different needs, self-care, and how we approach and engage our recoveries. In service work, our common welfare needs to be something that allows for safety for all to have a voice. So let me start again. Oops, it changed. Oh, okay. In service work, our common welfare needs to be something that allows for safety for all to have a voice, loving allowance of each other, even if we don't agree, knowing that there is a higher power and that we are allowing our higher power to work through us as well as through others. Many times, as my experience as a chair for the Board of Trustees, in the first 4 years, especially, and as well as advisor for another 3 years after that, my program was challenged to beyond what I could have even begun to imagine. And so it's been a grateful opportunity. It was and still is today in my service work, a grateful opportunity to practice loving allowance and to practice these principles in all my affairs. You know, we each bring a history, our histories individually, even to our service work, just like we do with any other situation. I think I changed the page. Okay. Service work, it challenged me many, many times to deal with my history because I would get triggered in my service work. If somebody disagreed with me and had some passion behind that disagreement, I would take that personally, and I had to learn how to not take it personally. Mm-hmm. I had to learn how to let it go and to let others have their belief system and to not base my well-being on whether somebody agreed with me or not. My triggers became great opportunities to grow and to change and to evolve. And I will tell you, there were some challenges in the first 4 years that pretty serious challenges and concerns that we had, serious threats to CODA. So trying to deal with those and stay detached, out boundaries, not get emotionally hooked, was truly a learning process for me, and sometimes to me still is. But it's allowed me to get stronger in loving allowance. And I love the term loving allowance. It to me, it is it's an energy or vibration above acceptance. So in acceptance, when I have to pursue acceptance of something, it's because I've judged it. And now I have to accept it, you know, and sometimes resentfully I have to accept. But if I'm in loving allowance, it means I did not judge it to begin with. I allowed it to be exactly the way it was. And I had to learn it from a dear friend who basically, I was complaining at one point about my mom and the concerns I had about her and how she was wrong and she did, you know, and they stopped me and basically said, "Ken, so what, do you think your higher power loves and adores your mother?" And, you know, my first instinct, you know, to justify my position was, no, you know, God feels the same way I do. But given second thought, I said, absolutely. And you think God loves and adores others? Yeah. Do you think God loves and adores you? Yeah. Then why won't you do the same for your mother? And it was like, oh, dang, let me take the knife out of my heart, put it over here on the table. And I got it. I got that, that I'm judging, I'm playing God, I'm going one up because I was afraid and in shame and hurt by some of the things she had said. And so it was a powerful opportunity to start practicing that in service work as well. To lovingly allow others to have their beliefs, have their opinions, have their discussions, and to truly trust in God's will and the outcome and not try to control it. But we'll talk about that in a minute.
So I'm going to go to the next slide. there you go. Codependence is a conflict in God's, meaning that we'll make people, places, things our higher power, or we will become a higher power to others. Either way, we give our personal power away to something outside of ourselves. And when we're doing that, we stay unconscious of our higher power. As an example with this would be if somebody has a need to bring, you know, literature or maybe information that they were impacted by, that they learned about outside of CODA. They may feel that everybody in the meeting would benefit, everybody would be happy for the information, it would help them out so much, all of that. And the only thing is, what happens with that is that the need for somebody to bring that information in usually is at some level that wanting to fix the group, wanting to fix different individuals in the group. But there, you know, it's not a negative agenda that's going on, because I think the intent is that they want to be helpful. But it then confuses the CODA member. You know, if the information is not of CODA and from CODA, it can be confusing to each of the CODA members that are there, whether they're new or whether they've been there a while, but especially to the newcomer with that. And so part of this being how that ties into being a conflict in God's is when we have a need of what I've found anyways, when I have a need of any kind, I have an agenda. I have an expectation. And so if my need is greater than that of what our traditions speak, then I'm there in a self-serving manner instead of looking at our common welfare. So it's interesting how, for me anyways, how that would could play out at different times, because you know, there could be, I know at different times I'd be sitting in a meeting, I'd be hearing somebody share, and I'd think, oh, I've got some information that would be helpful for them, you know, and how important it is to keep that information to myself. Now, I may go up to them after the meeting and say, you know, would you like any feedback on what you shared, and give them an opportunity to say yes or no to that. Or if I had a workshop I knew about or a book that I knew about, I may go up after the meeting is done and say, I have some information, would you like to hear it? They can then say yes or no, but I'm not going to push my agenda on anyone with that. Instead, I am going to make sure that, you know, what is shared within CODA is about CODA and for CODA. So then next slide. Thank you.
Safety, especially when in the provision of service work, is critical. We need to know that we have the freedom to be who we are, continuing to grow into be, and that, and so I think this tradition really addresses that, the need for that. The tradition keeps CODA, the traditions, all of them actually keep CODA safe for all to attend. We can share with others outside a meeting literature, authors, workshops, information, just not in the CODA meeting itself. In this case, my common welfare is different than our common welfare. And CODA service, our common welfare, helps CODA stay intentional in keeping CODA safe, loving, and caring of each individual that attends. And so this is a stickler for me, in that because codependent, the core of codependence is clearly toxic fear and toxic shame, that CODA service environments need to be free from any and all judgments. And because I need to know that it's safe for me to be clear with who I am and what I might think and what I might believe, and not be judged for that. You can see it differently, but judgment is, there's no room for judgment in codependence recovery. Okay, judgment is based in fear, and it's the pure source of all toxic shame. And so it's important that I had to learn and continue to learn that to be diligent in my recovery and to practice these principles in all my affairs, including in service work, whether that service work is setting up a room for a meeting, whether that's a home group member, regional member, you know, international, national workshops, CODA events, is that there's just no room for judgment. And I encourage people ask me a lot. So when, you know, I felt like I was judged by somebody, what do I say? I tell them often, it's okay to turn right back around and say, simply, please don't judge me. You know, and set a boundary. And I've heard many stories over the years of people who quit service work because they felt judged, or people gathered armies to go after someone with judgment, and because it's not what CODA is about. It's not what CODA recovery is about. So I really encourage everyone to be diligent about whether what they're saying with someone to someone is judgmental, or is it just assessment a huge difference between loving, between judgment and assessment. Assessment's a healthy thing. Judgment's not.
Okay. The next slide, Sam. So we're going to go into the second part of the tradition, personal recovery depends upon coding unity. And then if you could go to the next one, thank you. Our recovery is necessary for us to stay integrated with our higher power and ourselves. It gives us a set of tools to use should our codependent surface. So part of, for me in that, is my codependence, because I know there's no perfection in codependence recovery, that's an illusion. Part of what my program gives me is a set of tools that when I do have a codependent episode, when I do get into thoughts or behaviors that are about my codependence, I have a way to get out of that. I have a way to deal with that. So besides being a conflict in God's, codependence is also of your addiction. I kind of look at it for myself. It's like codependence is the way we are relationally through fear. So that doesn't matter if that's how I'm being relational with myself or with you or with my higher power. If I am approaching that through fear, then I'm in my codependence. That then becomes compulsive and addictive, which is why it becomes a fear addiction. When I look at all the patterns and the characteristics, those for me, when I look at them, I see them all being fear-based. My fourth step was all fear-based. 10 steps are anytime that I am in my codependence, there's some part of me that is feeling like I need to survive something, that I'm not feeling safe, that somehow something is off. And so I need to, revert back into those old behaviors that never worked, but still revert back into those old behaviors that somehow give me the illusion of safety. Of course, that doesn't happen. So part of recovery helps me to be accountable. It helps me to surrender, helps me to trust God, to let God, in a whole different way than what I had ever been able to do before. Practicing a third step for me today is so different from what it was, when I first was in codependence recovery. I don't think I quite understood it at that point. But today I know that my higher power has my highest good, wants my highest good, is there for me. I'm the only one that blocks out my higher power. And so it is something that, that benefits me to the greatest degree.
If we are in our codependence, then we are playing God or making others our God. We are in fear of doing it right, saying it right, making others hear our truth, controlling others to see it our way, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, in control of the outcome, one way or the other. At those times, we have stepped out of our common welfare, and we've stepped out of healthy, loving unity. Another way to say this is that if we are controlling, being compliant, avoidant, denying our codependence or low self-esteem, then we will need an outcome that will fix us. Basically, we then become self-focused, self-centered, and instead of focusing on co-unity and focusing on our common welfare. And basically, anytime I have been in control, it has been driven by fear. And so one of the ways that I became more aware of how much fear I was in is how much control was I in at the moment. Was I was my well-being based on controlling the outcome of this so I'll feel better? What I was really doing was trying to control the outcome so my fear would go away. Because if my mind, if I could control how this turns out, then I'll feel better. That becomes my fix. Fear became my fix. And so, and if I can be right, then I won't feel the shame of me. Well, basically, which is some powerful shame that I grew up with, consistently. And, you know, I think I mentioned earlier, I've even tried to gather armies, go to different people, you know, get them to see it all my way. Say, well, all of us feel this way about what you're saying. So you need to change what you're saying somehow. You know, you need to control the outcome, which is gathering armies to, my belief system is gathering armies to abuse another person through fear. And I've been on both sides of that fence and have learned some very powerful experiences in humility by having to deal with that. And so basically I had to learn to let go and let God, and you know, to share what I need to share, but not attach my well-being to the outcome. And part of what's been helpful for me to learn was that when I'm in fear, I'm attaching my well-being into controlling the outcome. When the fact is, my only source for my well-being is my heart. And you know, it's been one of the greatest gifts of my recovery, not only in service work, but in my relationship with myself, my higher power, with our kids and grandkids, our families, covered people, like the work that we do, is to stay detached and allow people to be exactly who they are, not control the outcome, share what I may need to share. And if you disagree, it's okay. I might actually learn something. But it took a long time to recognize it, and to allow myself to be humbled enough by a situation to recognize that there was much to learn, I was afraid to learn. So, okay, the next slide.
Thank you. So each person in CODA deserves a voice. You know, it's part of the beauty of what our traditions do, what our service structure is all about, is that, you know, every person from, you know, the individual member into the group, into the community, you know, the regional, into the state, into the international, you know, it's a place for everybody to be able to have a voice. But what's important for each of us is to practice healthy communication when we have our voice. Meaning, you know, some of what Kim was saying, if we're going to communicate, that we don't put anybody else down while we're communicating. You know, I remember being taught just a really simplistic way of communication, you know, around sharing, and just that my feelings are always in I statements. We have that in our pamphlets. And that when I'm sharing what was said or done, that there's no shame, blame, judgment, criticism, or analyzing. So it stays really clean communication, even if I'm presenting something that is there. So how important it is for each of us to honor each other in that way, to be able to share in a healthy way. Again, like Ken was saying, you know, we don't have to agree with each other. We don't have to see it how anybody else sees it. But, you know, we want to be able to share in a healthy, loving way, you know, that is respectful of other people and ourselves, as we talk about in our promises. So also when we are listening, so, you know, there's the sharing part and there's the listening part. And when we're listening, also being able to listen without judgment, just listen, that, you know, that, okay, this person has a different point of view. You know, Kim was saying, you know, what can I learn from this? How can I, you know,
hear that this is where that person is coming from. Again, as long as they're sharing in a clean way and in a healthy way, everybody has a right to share what they need to share, and for us to be able to really listen and hear somebody. Not, you know, I used to, I don't know about you guys, but I would sit in meetings, so it's going around in a circle, you know, and it's getting like two or three people before I'm going to share. And pretty soon I'm not hearing anything what those two or three people say, because I'm already in my head thinking about what I'm going to share. And, you know, and what happens is I miss out on the gifts of whatever those two or three people share. You know, sometimes in communication, when it starts to break down, is we don't really hear somebody, and we're already creating a comeback to whatever it is that's being said before we fully listen and hear them. And I think that is another way of showing our love and our respect for each other. You know, we're all here to try and help each other get better, not to debate recovery, I guess is a good way of saying it, you know, but instead, how can I be encouraging and supportive to the people around me in their recoveries? So back to the slide. Let me go back. I went way off script there. So in addition, what is equally important for those listening is to allow the person their healthy communication voice without trying to silence them or control them or put them down in any way. Again, we don't have to agree with each other. We can lovingly respect each other and know that each person's doing the best job they can do. For disagreements, we've got our traditions. So that's our guidance of how we do that. And we have our group conscious vote to make our decisions. So, you know, to me, there's no need to debate anything. There's just sharing our different perspectives and then take a vote, you know, which is so simple. So, you know, a lot of that, you know, in the past for me, I would, you know, notice, especially when we were still early on in CODA, when we were still part of the conferences, the business conferences and the board, you know, there could be that tendency for some one up, one down control. You know, people being maybe compliant and saying yes to everything, even though they hadn't really thought about it, just because they maybe felt intimidated by another person, or they didn't want to upset them or disappoint them, so they go ahead and agree with them. And I think it's important for all of us, you know, to be able to own our own realities, to be able to trust what our intuition is telling us and communicate those things in a loving, healthy way. I think when we do that, we can practice that with each other. It also makes CODA a much safer place to be in and know that we can share our truths with each other.
Okay, next slide.
Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, Sam. Focusing on our common welfare and striving for working harmoniously together for the good of CODA brings a spiritually based unity within CODA. As with everything, it begins with us and our personal recoveries. I think work, you know, being active in service work is a stage of our evolution and our growth. But I mean, it's a great, great source of opportunities to practice these principles in all our affairs, mm-hmm. and to you know, just surrender, letting go, turning situations over to the care of God as we understand God. My experience has been when I can step back outside of myself and my fears, when I'm trying to control a situation or the outcome of something, and just take three giant steps back, a deep breath and relax, I just drop right back into peace, which means I just connected back with my higher power. I doesn't mean I won't maybe feel disappointed and a vote or an outcome that go, I want to do, but it just simply means that I feel disappointed, but it's an opportunity to understand why I felt disappointed and what is there something here for me to learn. It doesn't mean I'm wrong, the bad, or all the other toxic shame messages that I am growing up. So it's a great source of practicing tools that we cover. And so I encourage people to, you know, after a significant step work, et cetera, as its next stage of evolution, is to become involved in service work, because without you, CODA doesn't exist. And we need one another to keep CODA growing and evolving, because it's going to keep doing that. And so I think statistically right now, the percentage of people providing service work in general, under 12-step programs, and COVID itself is roughly 5 to 7% provide service work. So my hope is that you'll find a place in your heart to use, take the opportunity to be able to pay it forward and pass on what you've given to other people. We're going to take time now to move on to sharing and questions and open the floor a little bit. So, Sam, would you go to the last page?